Look, we're moving him while he's brushing. Look.
I'll scan it again.
Keep scanning.
Keep scanning it.
Okay, apparently there's a big price to pay for his type of comedy, but from a young age, it's been working.
I mean, the guys and I from Impractical Jokers, we met when we were 13 years old. We were kids.
From jokes to improv, if it's funny, they'll give it a try.
Our goal is to confuse people, amuse them in a way that they are, it's so odd, the situation, they don't know how to react.
He's a comedian, an actor, a producer, and you know him as...
Hey everyone, it's Murr from Impractical Jokers, the skinny bald one on the show. And coming up next, you'll see me on The Pulse with Bill Anderson.
Who are you thinking? I'm an Impractical Joker!
Guys, welcome to another episode of The Pulse, where we talk to people doing cool things, hearing their story, talking about their experiences. And this one's going to be fun. I mean, they're all fun to some degree, but I'm on my guard now. I was just explaining to our guests, I got to make sure I'm not having some jokes played on me. So comedian, entrepreneur, producer, what else? How do we describe you, James Murray or Murr? I mean, Practical Jokers.
What's up, buddy? How are you? You know, husband, author, friend.
Okay.
Other adjectives, I guess.
I'll take it.
Nouns.
It's always awkward, right? Like, whenever you're doing those things, you're like, okay, so tell me your bio. You know, people are like, okay. And if they're not, if it's somebody who takes great joy in telling you their bio, then you know it's going to be one of those kind of interviews. I'm awesome. So doing all of those different things, I was reading into your background and some of those things. How did this, the comedy world, the improv world, like you took a an odd journey to that path?
I would say so. Yeah. I mean, the guys and I from Impractical Jokers, we met when we were 13 years old. We were kids, right? We were, freshman year of high school, I met the guys in Miss Fiducia's religion class.
Nice.
It was like an all boys Catholic high school, so there was like nothing to do other than prank each other and screw around, you know, because none of us had any dating lives, so that's for damn sure. So we just started doing comedy together in high school, and then went to different colleges, and after college came back and formed a comedy troupe, and then did a lot of very, very, very bad comedy shows for a long time. Until we came up with the idea for Impractical Jokers, and that was 15 years ago. I had a lot more hair back then, but I'm just getting older and balder on TV.
Okay, and growing, expanding, doing more
Not
things.
Not me. I'm the only one in shape. The other guys have been growing. They got to learn how to do a crunch, man.
There you go. Keeping things together. I would venture a guess that you may be the only person in comedy with that level of success and exposure who starts the story with religious class or religion class to pull that together.
It's where a lot of our comedy comes from, I guess.
I wonder when people hear that story, they're like, really? Like, that's what you guys were doing in religion class, but that was the origin of it.
Now, I said we weren't learning the Beatitudes. We were. I was watching the guys like drop their nose on people in the class to make each other laugh.
Well, see, and now you get to look back and go, that there it was. That's where it all started. The perfect place. So you went your separate ways to go to college and what have you. Mm-hmm. Was the plan to come back and try to build that?
No one could plan for that. I mean, we didn't get it on TV, so we were 34 years old, you know? So if it was planned, I would have gotten on TV at 22. No, we were like already in our regular careers. Like Sal owned a bar at that point, and Joe's like a salesperson. Q was a fireman, FDNY, for like 8 years. I was a decorated fireman. And I was the only one that had a job in TV. I worked in TV development. My job was to like create and pitch and sell TV shows. So I did that for a long, long time. For like 10 years, I worked that job, kind of learning the ins and outs of TV and how TV's made and sold. And then the guys and I came up with the idea for Jokers, and we pitched it through my job. And there you go. That was my career made a quick left turn there and went a different direction.
So working in TV a little bit, I'm familiar with some of those jobs that you just kind of gloss over. The senior vice president of development and creating shows. That's not just, I had a job in TV. Like, you had a successful, like, pretty prestigious job in TV.
I loved the job. I still do it in a way. I still pitch a lot of TV shows to this day. And it, my favorite part of my career, I'd say, is creating ideas and pitching and selling them. So like I write a lot of books. My favorite part is not the writing of the books. That's hard as hell. But coming up with the ideas and then selling them to publishing houses, and it is a lot, really exciting. And that's one of my favorite parts. Other than performing live, that's one of my favorite parts of my career, for sure.
So did you, I mean, you've kind of combined it. So stand-up comedian, is that how you define yourself? A lot of it was improv. Like, you guys won an improv competition early on.
God, you're going back, man.
I read.
Yeah. Well, my stand-up comedy show is unlike the other guys' solo shows. Like, the guys and I do the collective Impractical Jokers tour, and then we do solo shows too. So, but my show is very different. Like, it's a stand-up comedy show for sure. Like, the first half is material I've written and practiced and prepared about, like, some of the most embarrassing things that ever happened to me in my life. But the second half of my live show is very much improv. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. I make it up as I go, truly. So, like, in my live shows end with us playing Impractical Jokers live, meaning I choose someone from the audience, put an earpiece in their ear, send them out into the streets of wherever I might be, so Pottstown, PA, or Ocean City, Maryland, or Red Bank, New Jersey, yeah. And we watch on screen in the theater, and live on the spot, I tell the person what to say and do in public. It's wild, man. It's like watching the TV show happen live in front of your face, and it's uncensored, so you don't know what's going to happen. That's it's the best. Awesome. It's so much fun.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I think that the whole concept, though, it almost feels like the industry had to catch up with you guys. Like, you were doing the whole, we'll do it ourselves, we'll put it up on YouTube or whatever it was, we'll generate the millions of views, before that was really, you know, what people were doing. And now it's like,
well, before
all right,
that was a career.
Up.
Now you could, like, I think we hit the sweet spot for TV in terms of, like, we sold the show at the right time. I don't think you could sell the show anymore because TV is just so different than it was 15 years ago. Now, I think if you're out and about now doing what we do, you would just purely do it on YouTube or TikTok or what have you and try to monetize it that way. You know, the world has changed, but I think we're one of the last kind of legacy series running at this point in terms of comedy.
So the world has changed, but they still like what you do. So that's kind of interesting, right? Like, it has evolved, and you can do it on social media or YouTube or what have you, but you guys still manage to kind of carve out that niche and keep going.
I think what it comes down to is we're still having a blast making the show. I mean, season 12 starts soon, 3 weeks, July 10th, a brand new season. We're shooting it right now. We shoot through mid-September. We've been filming for months. We're still having a blast, man. Like, on Friday, last Friday, I lost the episode. It'll be on TV in a few months. Okay. I lost the episode, and I legit worked as a waiter in New York City for like 5 hours a shift. And after finding out people's dietary restrictions, I would go over to the table that I was, waiting, and without permission, push food in people's mouths with my bare hands. It was a punishment, right? It was outrageous. It was so shocking and so funny. We were on the floor laughing. It's so such a shocking thing to do that people, no, I thought people were going to stand up and punch me. No one did. They just laughed or burst out laughing or were in such shock because it happened so quick that I pushed food in their mouth as their waiter. I was like, you have to try this. The chef just made this fantastic. And it's so shocking that no one knew what to do. The restaurant was frozen. It was, I never could have anticipated that. Like, neither could have the guys. I thought some jerk's going to stand up and take a swing at me, or it just didn't happen, man. It's so ridiculous. And it's like stuff like that. We were crying, laughing. And I think that's what makes the show still work, is that we're clearly having a blast still doing it, you know?
So, fun fact, I actually saw your commercial last night. You made me very cool to my girlfriend. We're sitting there, we're watching TV, the promo for the new season comes on, and I was like, yeah, I'm interviewing him tomorrow.
That's great, man.
Just a little something. So you kind of see it and going through. You said that nobody got up, nobody got an attitude. I was watching some of the just video before I started talking to you. Are you surprised that it has not gone down that path? you guys aren't mean-spirited, but you get the wrong person, it could be somebody taking a swing.
Sure. It's all the punishment, right? Like in the challenge in the show, we pull back from the more extreme things and we just won't do it, right? A consequence be damned, because I'm just not going to do certain things, right? For anything.
Right.
But if you lose the episode, you get punished, and that you can't say no to. And there have been punishments that have been right on the edge, I know it. Like 2 months ago, I lost an episode. This just aired on TV back in like February, March. I lost an episode, and the punishment was very simple. They had rigged up a backpack I'm wearing. A tube went through the backpack, through my pants, came out the front, and they had a gallon-sized jug in the backpack, tinted yellow.
No.
And we were at like one of these strip malls where cars coming in and out constantly. There's a dry cleaners there, a deli there. It's just constant flow of traffic, right? And as people go in, do whatever they're doing, come out 4 minutes later, they've got to catch me peeing on their car tire, right?
Uh-huh.
And I had the device rigged through the backpack, through my pants, and it looked real, man. It looked like I was peeing on people's cars. Such a simple idea. And sure enough, a guy got all uppity and came at me. But I was too quick, man. I backed away. he took a swing. He missed me by a mile. So
cat-like quickness
was primed to get people angry. But that's not our goal, ever. Our goal is to confuse people, amuse them in a way that they are. It's so odd, the situation. They don't know how to react. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting point, because we had one of the guys, Steve-O from Jackass, came on the show and was talking to us. And I think it's similar but different. Like he said, one of the things about the show is people love it, laugh, enjoy, because it's not mean-spirited. Like you're getting people laughing with you,
sure. And
you're so clearly enjoying it. That's what I get sitting there watching you guys. Like this is a show that you're doing because you think it's really funny and just let everybody else share in it.
Yeah, that's the goal, right? The goal is to make people laugh. The punishments get a little extreme or fun, but for every punishment like the peeing on people's cars, there's punishments like me pushing food in people's mouths where the tables, that after I would leave a table, they would burst out laughing because it's so shocking. Everyone got into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then it became a round robin thing where crew members started doing to me as a waiter on the floor, and it was just so much fun. I snuck outside the restaurant and caught one of our crew members who wasn't paying attention, went behind and put it. You know, it's, that kind of atmosphere is just contagious.
When you get a chance to look at what you guys have created, right? And we'll talk more about your show and, coming fairly locally to go ahead and do those things. We've got a global audience, so they can see you all over the place. But do you ever sit back and go, wow, you launched this kind of fun idea and it turned into millions and millions of views and people appreciating it and, a decade worth of people watching?
No, I think when you're in it, you don't really have a sense of it. But like 2 weeks ago, the show just the American version in Practical Jokers plays around the world in like 120, 130 countries or so, right? And they dub over our voices, what have you, to other languages. But then the format for Impractical Jokers, where, a bunch of lifelong friends compete in hidden camera challenges to make each other laugh, the loser gets punished, also plays in a number of countries. The original format where they recast the guys and I, right? Mm. So like 2 weeks ago, I did a consultation with the company and the network making the show in Lithuania. They just sold 26 episodes, season one in Lithuania. So I worked with the cast, the new cast, the guys, the Lithuanian Impractical Jokers were on Zoom with me, along with the producers and the writers. And I was taking them through how to make the show, technically, things like that. In moments like that, I'm like, oh, that's freaking awesome, man. I worked with an Australian cast of Impractical Jokers. They're in season two or three now. I worked with a Brazilian cast of Jokers, the Belgian cast, the Dutch cast, the British cast, Canadian cast, Mexican cast. That's pretty cool. Like that, in moments like that, I'm like, oh, shoot, man. Like, that's wild. Like, I think because we're filming all the time, you're in it so much, you don't have distance. You can't, what is the expression? You can't see the forest through the trees.
Yeah.
One day when it all ends, I will look back and say, and kind of really take it all in. But in the meantime, I'm just still enjoying making the TV show.
That senior VP title just rang true in that discussion. So not only were you guys are you guys talented? But you also understood the business. So you own this, and you're sitting there helping people develop it in other places under the label of things that you created and have ownership of.
It's cool to see ideas we came up with, like in the writer's room years ago. Now I'm teaching other countries and their casts how to do that challenge. That's wild. Like how to rig up the cameras in such a way to cover this idea, and what the best punishments are for them to do in season one of their show in their country to maximize the chance. Like, we made every mistake in the book over the past 15 years, but yeah. Now to have 300 plus episodes of TV and thousands of challenges we've done and tens of thousands we've created that we've scrapped and not produced. We know every mistake we can make, and then to teach other countries how to do it and skip all those steps and do the very best material that we've learned and to give them the best chances of success in their country. That's freaking awesome.
Yeah. How is that viewed by your peers? Like, your average comedian has to come up with, I don't know, two shows a year, like different comedy as you're kind of out there touring. You guys have had to come up with 300 ideas that can go out there and make people laugh, and doing, you know, multiple, sometimes a month.
You know what? I don't think anybody really realizes that. We talk about that exact thing from time to time. If you do the math, we've done maybe 330 episodes of the show and rising. Every episode has 3 to 5 challenges, or, you know, between the challenge and the punishment. Let's say 4 on average. So that's, hey Siri, what's 330 times 4? So that's
1,320.
1,320 bits we've done on the show, let's say, in the past 15 years, of which there's dozens of jokes per bit, dozens and dozens in each bit. So let's say, I think we have the highest joke average per minute of television on TV. So let's say there's per minute 10 jokes is probably right. So that's 13,320 jokes. Wait, is that right?
Dude, you lost me at 13,20.
That's bits, but so in a typical bit, let's say there's this 5 minutes a bit, 6 minutes a bit, of which is 10. So maybe there's 100 jokes per bit. So that's 130. It's
a lot. It's a whole lot.
It's a lot of jokes. It's hundreds of thousands of jokes we've written that have gone on TV in the past 15 years, and probably a million jokes that we've written that have not gone on. So I don't know. It's a lot of jokes.
It's the really impressive, one of the many impressive things about improv, because you have all of those, but they're not all written. Like, you've got to be able, all of you guys got to be able to respond on the fly to whatever is going on and continue pivot. And do I push it further? Do I rein it back because somebody's about to take a swing? Like, all of that in real time.
Yeah, that's the behind the scenes work mixed with improv, right? So before we go into a challenge, we write, us and our team of writers come up with 25 pages of material per challenge that we write and then cherry pick and hone to our selects of things that we want to try each, or we want the other guys to try. And then what we don't know, and we'll try it. And then what we don't know is how people are going to react, and the joke keeps going. It's wild. It's a lot of fun.
Wow. All right. So the Errors Tour is what you're now out on. And we could keep talking about the show and everything else, but people should just watch the next season. It's the best way to get caught up
July
with everything.
July 10th, brand new season on TBS.
The Errors Tour, you're coming to Soul Joel's in Pottstown. That's June 28th. You're coming to Red Bank, New Jersey, the 29th. You're continuing the tour. What are we going to see on the Errors Tour? You started giving us a little something.
Yeah, by the way, my solo stand-up tour, it's so much fun. It's like watching Impractical Jokers happen live in front of your face. You can get your tickets at MurrahLive.com. I will be in Ocean City on Friday the 27th. Okay. Soul Joel's 2 shows. The first one sold out. Second one is about to be on Saturday night, the 28th. And then Red Bank, of course, hometown here in Jersey, on the 29th. It's so much fun, man. It's like stand-up comedy mixed with improv and seeing Impractical Jokers happen live in front of your face. It's outrageous.
People can come, have a great time, and might end up a part of the show.
It's quite possible.
Insane to think about it. Is there a what's next? It feels like you're kind of living your bucket list. So what's in development? What should we be looking
for? Yeah, man.
For?
I mean, some really cool stuff. We just shot a horror movie based on one of my thrillers, my novels. It comes out later this year. It's called Don't Move. The movie is awesome. It's done. In the movie is T-Pain, Rob Riggle, Russ the Rapper, Q from Impractical Jokers. It's wild and it's scary as hell and really funny too. That'll come out at the end of the year. What else? My wife and I just bought a house and saved one of America's longest running model railroad clubs.
So, I just was about to ask you that. The Rocky Hill Railroad.
Yeah, so nearby, like 10 minutes away from my house here in Jersey, is one of America's longest-running model railroad clubs. It's built into a basement of a house, like a regular house, but it's bigger than the house itself. They knocked out a foundation wall and kept going. The entire model railroad train layout is bigger than the house I live in, right here. We're in my house. The Model Railroad Club is bigger than the entire house I live in. It's wild. It's like 12,000 square feet of track. It's unbelievable. These guys have been building, this club has been building this model railroad. They started in 1950 and the club formed in 64 and they just kept going. And as a nonprofit, they donate all their proceeds for the year to fire and EMT services in Jersey. And these folks have just been using sweat and imagination for decades to build the most amazing professional model railroad you've ever seen. It's unbelievable. It's called Pacific Southern Railway. Last year, the owner of the home and the president of the club sadly passed away from cancer, and his widow was forced to sell the house. As happens across America, when they have to sell a house, inevitably somebody comes in, buys the house and says, you got to get out of the house. I'm not giving up the entire basement of the house to this model railroad club that's been coming in for 75 years. Even though they're a nonprofit and they donate to charity, and even though they open up the house multiple times a year for the public to go through and for families to see the trains. So the night before it was going up for public sale and it's presumably the club would be shut down, my wife and I bought the train club and bought the house and we became a board member of one of America's longest running train clubs. And my wife moved her candle company in there. We run an Alzheimer's charity called 95 Charity. That moved into there as well. And I was just there last night at the train club. And more importantly, anybody can become a member. It's nonprofit. It's tax deductible. You can become an active member and actually show up on Wednesday nights to our house to play with the toy trains and learn the hobby. Or you become a virtual member and then you can show up on Zoom and show up and you get bi-weekly videos from me from the train club every 2 weeks. And you get swag and you get free tickets to the open house. All you got to do is go to pacificsouthern.org. It's awesome.
That is very cool. Was that an interest? You just saw about this and check it out?
My best memories from childhood are building my model trains with my father. My father passed from Alzheimer's about a year and a half ago, which is why Melissa and I run an Alzheimer's charity called 95 Charity. And to the day he died, he could remember three things, right? Four things, really. Three, he didn't remember us anymore, but if you put on the movie Airplane, he'd be crying laughing. He put on Sinatra, he knew every lyric. If you gave him a Model Railroad magazine, his eyes would light up, his smile across his face as you look through the Model Railroad magazine. Or if you put on his episodes of Impractical Jokers, he's on multiple episodes, he would start laughing. He didn't know it was him on TV, but he still laughed to the day he died. These are like core memories, you know? So my model trains were in our basement. I have a small house. I didn't have any space to build a train layout. So when this opportunity came up, I was like, this solves everything, man. My wife can run her candle company, 95 Candles, out of the house. We can do our charity event out of there. We can save the train club. I can rebuild my trains from childhood. It's just a win-win all around.
That is very cool. And I was reading about it, and I think that people, and especially in our area, should go and check it out. It's like a small city.
It's local, man. It's in Rocky Hill, New Jersey. From where you are, it's like an hour away, not even.
Yeah, it's like a city, like a railroad city that's been created down there. When you're talking about 12,000 square feet.
It's wild. Go to pacificsouthern.org. There's videos on there. You can see, become a virtual member, and you write it off on your taxes. It's like it cost you nothing.
That's amazing. You still, I mean, it's a silly question to ask because you've been smiling the whole time. You still really love this.
Of course, man. Yeah. You love your job, I take it. I see you smiling too.
I absolutely enjoy my job, but it is just the things that this has, you've created. Like, you walked away, more or less, from a really good job, and this has been smiling for, you know, 12, 14, however many years, and then able to use that to do other cool things like the railroad.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool situation. You know, it's to be in, for sure. It's very creatively satisfying.
I love it. All right, so people want to see you. They can check you out, follow you on social media. I'm sure people can imagine that's a really good follow, entertaining follow on social. Check out the tours, local, but kind of continuing around, right? After you leave this area, you're continuing on.
Yeah, in just a few weeks, I announced my entire fall tour. But I'll be all over the summer, still performing in Salt Lake City and what have you. And then I announced my fall tour, including some local shows. On July 18th, I'll announce the whole rest of the year. But it's going to be get your tickets at MurrahLive.com for any local shows. Go to PacificSouthern.org to become a member of one of America's longest-running model railroad clubs. And check out 95charity.net to support our Alzheimer's charity, too.
Yeah, you got mobile games, party games, serious shows, podcasts. You know, it was really cool kind of reading through some of this stuff. Sold out London Arena, and like, this has gone, the O2 Arena, this has gone crazy. All right, so we encourage everybody to follow, but we wrap every episode of The Pulse the same way. Like, the theme is... use your voice for good. So I always ask people, when they hear the phrase "use your voice for good," what does that mean to them?
Oh, that's it. That's the question.
Use your voice for good. It's that simple.
I wish I had a balloon to breathe in helium to answer the question. That would be freaking awesome,
right? It would be meaningful and funny.
Use your voice for good. Do what you love, don't hurt other people, and never let anyone else tell you no.
I like
never let anyone else tell you no from living your dreams.
Guys, thanks so much for listening to The Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast. Today with comedian and producer and improv artist. I don't even know what to call James Murray, so we'll just go with Murr from Impractical Jokers. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. He smiled and laughed through the whole interview. I love people who are just enjoying living their life and all the things that they can do to be helpful to people because of that life and that success. He was inspiring and fun, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you would like to get a notification every week when another episode of The Pulse comes out, and why wouldn't you? You should. Hit like, subscribe, follow, whatever it is that pops up on your screen. Also, download the Fox Local app so that you can take us with you on demand. And hit me up on social media at BillAFox29. Thank you so much for listening. And I leave you today, as I always do, reminding you, whenever you can, use your voice for good, and have a good one.